Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. If you believe opera is an acquired taste, then get ready for a big surprise with today's episode. Dallas Opera Television wants viewers of all ages to taste this entertainment through smart TV sets and devices. Overseer David Lumley joins me next. Blockchain, cryptocurrency, NFTs, crowdfunding. Is this the new mainstream formula to get new TV content and ventures together? Popular TV and tech commentator Shelley Palmer brings his thinking to you later this hour. Also ahead, the CW's primetime turn, Stephen Colbert on stage again, and our new classic trivia question. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and present on Amazon Music, Verbal, and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com. The leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book or two when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. A very happy last full week of May to you and all, and welcome once again to the program all about TV's current and future. 66 degrees at the top of the hour, absolutely beautiful day here in the metro area. Delighted to have you with us for a terrific hour of conversation about where this medium is heading. I think our pair of guests today are going to do the trick for you, and we invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. Interact with us by phone and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number's good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, or TuneIn Radio. We've also got a chat room business for you. It's SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the program is on the air, you can interact and connect with others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk speaker student screen. Follow the instructions. Other people can be live with you. And David Lumley will join us live from Santa Fe, New Mexico, after these news notes. The CW is set to unveil its 2021-22 season lineup tomorrow afternoon. It will be the first with all 7 nights of the week covered, given the introduction of Saturday programs this fall. Most of the network's current schedule, including season newcomers Walker, Kung Fu, and Superman and Lois, will return. What's up in the air? Who will be the first Saturday series? And how many new series contenders, including the live-action version of popular Cartoon Network tune The Powerpuff Girls, will get the green light? CBS will reopen the Ed Sullivan Theater here in New York on June 14th to restart The Late Show with Stephen Colbert with a full live audience. Colbert has originated his nightly series without a live crowd since mid-March of 2020. Now, all attendees at the Ed Sullivan Theater will have to show ID of being vaccinated, and they do not have to wear face masks if the Ed Sullivan Theater can accommodate more than 400 people for each episode. Now, quickies, get ready for Season 3 of A Black Lady Sketch Show. HBO's call to continue the series came this afternoon prior to Friday's wrap of Season 2. FX's on-again, off-again redo of the iconic NBC miniseries Shogun appears on track again. Two of the three lead roles, Tornaga and John Blackthorne, will be played by Hiroshi Sanada and Cosmo Jarvis, respectively. The original roles were done by Richard Chamberlain and Toshiro Mifune. Recurring Shark Tank panelist Kevin O'Leary, Mr. Wonderful to many of us, will get a primetime series of his own on CNBC. Money Court is the series, and it goes in session August 11th. The crowdfunding campaign of Clash TV continues, more than $734,000 in raised for that interactive app to date. And on the pro development scene, Lee Daniels extended his 20th television relationship following last week's pickup of the Wonder Years revival and Our Kind of People at NBC, at ABC, and Fox, respectively. Also, actor Robert Pattinson is jumping into his first ever development pact with Warner Brothers and HBO Max. And that is news notes for today. Before we bring our first guest on, here's a little history lesson for you. If you think that opera is a Johnny-come-lately to television that shows up every now and then on public television, you will be very much mistaken. In fact, opera on television has been around pretty much since the medium started in the early 1950s. In 1949, NBC, in fact, created its own opera company known as NBC Opera Theater. Their first production 2 years later was Amhal and the Night Visitors, a Christmas tale by Giancarlo Menotti that was produced especially for television, presented live in New York, and advertised by Hallmark Cards. In fact, it later became one of the major presentations of their series, the Hallmark Hall of Fame, and it became a Christmas tradition for many years thereafter. Between 1951 and 1964, NBC Opera Theater presented more than 40 productions, many of them original and made for television. All of them were done live. Now, you can find opera mostly on public television, and in recent months, you can now find it on smart TV sets and smart devices full time. in what is believed to be the only channel of its kind around. It's called Dallas Opera Television, and here to talk about it live from Santa Fe, New Mexico, is its overseer, David Lumley. David, welcome to our program.
Hello, Simon. Thank you for having me here with your audience. I'm very, very, very excited to be here today with you.
It is a pleasure, David. This idea of doing a full-time channel or full-time service about opera, how long had your organization thought about doing it, and what finally decided, yeah, let's go for it?
Well, you know, it is very strange because actually Dallas Opera has been, you know, for quite a bit, a little bit on the left field, if you want to say, you know, like we've been trying to really pay attention to what is happening and to be aware of how the audience's behaviors are changing, you know. So actually in March of 2020, right when the pandemic was starting, we founded what we call at that time the TDO Network, and we changed immediately the way that we were going to do social media, and we are starting to mimic a systematic schedule of content dropping. So every Monday at 9, you would get the same show that you get every Monday that you tune in. And we had trailers, and we promoted the content appropriately. And after a year, we had about 150 million views. In classical music channels, that's enormous. And so when we were around 40 million views at the beginning of the summer, of last year, the company said, well, how can we monetize and how can we help? Because, you know, all the production money that we put on the stage or digitally today is privately funded. And so we got an incredibly, like, head start of branding and reaching out to an audience that actually was there, you know, that there's an avid audience for classical music. And the problem is how we start selling them or creating products for them. And that's how Dallas Opera started. We created a platform with some incredible engineering of streaming of First Line, very similar like Prime Video and Netflix in their development and algorithms that you can get inside of it. And we created new content. And so this is how it started, because we saw that the audience was there, and if we couldn't reach them geographically, that it was normally before this past year, it was the only way that we could get income and connect with an audience. Now, online, we can reach out to the world and make the brand of the Dallas Opera known very beautifully online.
Mm-hmm. How does this service address some of the criticisms that in some people's eyes has prevented opera from being a really mass entertainment medium? Things like it's too esoteric, I can't get into the characters, I can't get into many of the operas, including some of the major ones that maybe I know, like Carmen or the Barber of Seville, they're in non-English languages, even with subtitles, I can't identify with the characters. How does this service address all of those subjects?
Well, I think that we try to do our best first to compete inside of this streaming feeling, you know, like, so yes, we do have subtitles, but we also created a lot of our content in English, you know, for the American audience. But we also have multilingual content, so since we wanted to be an international platform. So we are, in a way, we meet you in your language in most of the times. And if not, we bring a subtitle to help in that sense. The fact that we could be a little bit not realistic with the world is, or a little bit far there, this time we wanted to create content that is specifically designed to be consumed in this way. So it's not the voyeuristic experience of the, you know, of the Metropolitan Opera HD, let's say. You know, and I don't want to say bad things in a voyeuristic experience, but it's, you're seeing the performance that is performed live for another audience, and you're kind of peeking in, right, with great 4, 5, 6 different angles in HD, but you're peeking in. Here is something that is projected for this audience, that we're going to create a performance for these screens. So we have a lot of original content. And we also modernized the way that we deliver the music. For example, in our very first, let's say, recital or concert that we were going to put in the original, The Way We Love, and with Isabel Leonard, we did more like a recital where a traditional, let's say, quote-unquote, opera performer is actually delivering like an iTunes session live, very intimate. We created a different filters. We created something very actual in feel, but in content, it was still operatic in technique. We mashed up a little bit of Bernstein with a little bit of Mozart. We did a couple of fun things, and we started to break some barriers because it was specifically designed for the digital screen. So I think the way that we are creating content, the lineup of people that are doing the content with us, and the delivery method that is, you know, a subscription for $5 a month or a la carte buying the content that you want. I think that addresses so many of the layers of the questions you just mentioned.
We're talking about the Dallas Opera Television or Dallas Opera TV. That is the smart TV service that is available on places like smart TV sets and devices that have the Amazon, that have Android as the operating system, Amazon Fire TV, Roku, et cetera. And we're talking with the person who oversees the service. His name is David Mummoli, and he joins us live from Santa Fe, New Mexico. Beautiful territory, by the way. My uncle used to live near there in Albuquerque. And he's with us live this half hour. On Tomorrow will be televised. Tom Abbott, I'm with you live from New York. Happy to have you with us, kicking off a week of three episodes of the Promo About TV's Current and Future. And if a question or comment for our guests, bring it in, 646-652-2906. We'll use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming your way Wednesday on our program, we'll have one of the key people behind Canela Media, one of the fast-growing Spanish-language television ventures, and they are growing quite a bit, going beyond just one channel to many. And they'll be launching original series programming on their flagship channel, Canela TV, next year. We'll get to all of that with Andres Rincon, formerly of LA TV. He's currently one of the key senior vice presidents at Canela. And we'll have more for you as well, and that'll be coming your way on Wednesday, same time, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televised. 2 p.m. Central, by the way, for all of you people listening in the Central Time Zone area. David, talk about some of the original programming, because I think when people see it, they're going to be quite surprised. For example, am I correct in saying that there is a vampire-style version of La Boheme, where there's a scene where some of the characters are playing baseball?
Yes, there is actually one of those. We have a lot of original content, and we put the backbone of the theme of the app is opera, but we wanted to put, you know, the sky as the limit for our content creators. So we have a lot of the lineup that is done a little bit more in a comedic style, you know. So we do have comedy style shows with opera, you know, in the middle of it as delivery method. We also have the ones that I am really, really proud lately, you know, are our original lineup that we call, that it's a little bit our higher end of budget movies. And we have, for example, one called Vanish that is starred by John Holliday that plays fifth in the finals of The Voice recently. And it's a freak of nature, a gift of Mother Nature to the people that love music, because he can sing anything. And he is part of our original film in a very specific way. You know, we created a film, an art film, an opera about the pain of a couple of two men that are suffering for each other. But actually the delivery is a story with music of Janáček and music from Orfeo, you know, the myth of Orfeo, an opera from Orfeo. So it's fascinating how, you know, it was in location. It was filmed multi-camera, beautifully directed by Ryan McKinney. We have also three major Mexican tenors for the first time together, jamming a little bit together, singing Bohemian, talking about really, really, really like deep, dark conversations that sometimes we never do in front of people. And we opened the door about that relationship in a film called The Heart of the Song that premieres May 26th. And so it's you know, those type of things, that type of original programming that is designed for these platform and connecting in so many ways. As you mentioned, you know, we can go as far as have a parody operatic game where you have vampires singing La Bohème. And then you also get the three kind of like amigos, you know, that the biggest Mexican singers talking about, like, you know, how is to make Mexican songs and then suddenly them breaking into song right away. So we have several things that are very, very special in our platform.
Is this a subscription service or an advertiser supported service? And depending on what it is there a possibility of, if it's not advertiser supported, is there a possibility of trying to get advertisers involved, either as underwriters or doing maybe special things, maybe even funding, let's say, a particular production?
Yes, we have advertisement opportunities, you know, to be delivered around the content, you know, not while you're watching the content once in a service. So people that subscribe don't worry about that kind of ad content, but it's inside collateral of the service in trailers and or so. And also, yes, we are looking always for underwriters for productions, very much like we always look for underwriters the way that we do in productions in the real theater, you know. So it's something very special. That we have not yet explored every single possibility that these digital platforms allows us in the way that we connect with the audience, that we connect with underwriters and subscribers, and how we can even monetize it. I think that we are still learning how to go ahead on this new Ferrari that we have at the company.
And also, that you also have a group of shows that are aimed at kids. What kind of programs do you do for that audience?
Oh, these are some of my favorites. You know, we have done operas in English, directly written and inspired, and all the concept for kids. We have right now like about four full-length operas that we have done by the Department of Education and Engagement of the Dallas Opera with incredible young singers. And very, very fun productions. We also have a couple of lessons there for kids, if for somebody that is interested on starting how to learn from some of the pros in the world. Isabel Lerner, the mezzo, superstar mezzo with us, has a series of lessons that she also gives us a little piece of mind of how to start and how to really, really get better at singing. So we have so many, many, many things that I think kids and even people that are just wanting to learn a little more didactic way and a little more educational way, they're going to have a lot of fun in our part for opera kids.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about Dallas Opera TV. It's one of the newest smart TV set and device services available nationwide through Android TV. That means sets and devices that have the Android operating system powered by Google, as well as Roku, Amazon Fire TV, and other such places. And we're talking with the Director of Artistic Administration at the Dallas Opera, who also is the overseer of this service, David Lomeli. He's with us live from Santa Fe, New Mexico this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. Simon, I'm with you live from New York. Live, you are with us. You have a question or comment or many minutes with David. Make the call, 646-652-2906, or use that chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Because of Memorial Day weekend, we'll be with you Tuesday and Friday of next week. And with us on Tuesday, we'll speak with an entrepreneur who's putting together a new service called Wondrium. It's a mix of educational programming as well as documentary programming. And we'll talk to Paul Suchik. He is the person behind the venture. You'll hear from him next Tuesday, same time, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We'll Be Televised. What's been the reaction, David, from not only viewers but from other opera companies around the country, opera composers who see – maybe this is the way I ought to hook up with you folks to create new operas for television. What kind of reaction are you getting?
I think, well, you know, to be honest, it's amazing because a lot of people have seen that maybe this is a way to get their work known in a faster cycle. You know, normally to get an opera commission, you're one of the lucky ones. Because an opera commission, it means that an organization today in the United States, even the smallest one, chamber ones, with a semi-pro, $1,000, you know, to put a full production with orchestra, chorus, technicians, rentals, and so on, such and such. But in the digital arena, you know, suddenly you can have an incredible piece of art for $40,000. And that has to spark the creativity of our industry. Amazing. We get submissions all the time for incredible projects, for length, sometimes for concerts, sometimes for mini series, sometimes for like full length films. And all of them are very to see. You're mentioning them. You know, all their lives, you know, they have delivered in any single way. From the digital world is where we need to go, or we're not going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
ASAP.
Mm-hmm.
David, over the weekend, I saw on YouTube a BBC production, it was made like 10, 15 years ago, of a opera that was also carried on PBS a long time ago called Street Scene. For those who don't know, Street Scene was a Pulitzer Prize-winning Broadway play by Elmer Rice. He originally adapted it for movies, which, by the way, you can see the movie now on YouTube. It's on Turner Classic Movies. Fantastic film by King Vidor. If you've never seen it before, it's really sensational. And that was made into an opera. The music and lyrics by Kurt Weill, the book by Langston Hughes. And when you watch it, it is one of the most accessible operas in terms of a major audience you can get. One, because people can relate to the characters. It takes place on a tenement block in New York City. Secondly, the characters sing as act as well as sing, and you really have to act. It's not like, you know, just come in the role and do it. You have to really act. And third, in the middle of this wonderful performance, there's a dance number that, if you do it right, can blow the whole place apart. In the BBC production, there was these two people. The number is called Blank Blank Starry Eyed, and this woman, Caroline O'Connor, who's a fantastic English Broadway star, like the equivalent of a Broadway star, sings, dance, acts up a storm, like Sutton Foster would say. And when they were done with their partner with this number, you know, British crowds, they don't usually, like, go bonsai. They went bonsai about this. They just literally, it was like they wanted to spring up out of their seats and just applaud. Do you see more operas like that? You know, what do people in the opera community think about, you know, maybe something like Street Scene, is that the way to go to maybe make opera a more mass appeal audience?
I feel that, for example, that the success of Street Scene, it was that at the moment of coming out, it was so realistically, like, you can touch still the story of that. Of that said, you could get out and feel yourself the ambience, you know, still in the atmosphere. I think that today, the way that we commission, and I feel that new work is where we need to go, and also how we portray the original work, you know. So I think that experiences with new directors, with new creatives, with piece of delivery like this, you know, in miniseries, in films, where there's no boundaries of which nationality, according to the union, you can use, or color of what people are always expecting, these massive Zeffirelli-esque type of very classic, like, shorts or sets when we do it. But when today we're switching into making it more accessible and more realistic, when artists start to reflecting more our current state of as a human race, I think that that's when opera is going to reclaim again this, like, place of ICL, of the peak where every single art form is there, you know, in opera singing. So I think that that's the way, for me, where we need to go in combining different ways of delivery of this art form.
So what can people expect over the next few months or year from your new service? And by the way, what kind of effort do you be making in terms of making the productions diverse, both in front of and behind the camera?
Well, you know, I have to be very, very proud of the Dallas Opera. You know, Dallas Opera has committed to diversity in so many ways. They are the main, you know, the pioneers of diversity in podium. They are the founders of the Harvard Institute for Women Conductors. For the past 3 years, we have been the highest diversity on the stage in the United States in opera. And they were the very first professional company in the United States to name a minority casting director or top authority when they named me director of artistic administration in 2018. And that has changed a lot, because I mean, the conversation and the table has changed. So the way that originally we launched our first, you know, launch of content, we went with 50% diversity in anchors, for TDO Network. And now our very first main films, we went with a full team of creatives and talents of Latin American, minority descent, and black for the very first original offer. So on purpose, we wanted to make it this very international, very, very inclusive, and from design, on purpose, diverse. So just from on purpose being like this, we hope that also we can reach multi-markets and multi-communities with the same type of content, you know.
Dallas Opera TV, you can find it around the country on many smart TV sets and smart devices, from Roku to Amazon Fire TV to Android TV sets and devices with the Android operating system powered by Google. For more details about the service online, go to dallasopera.tv. That's the dallasopera.tv. For more details about everything that this organization does, go online to dallasopera.org. That's dallasopera.org. Again, Dallas Opera TV. Find out more at the dallasopera.tv. Available on smart TV sets and smart devices all over the U.S. of A. David Lumley, thank you very much for joining us. Congratulations on getting this service off the ground. Hopefully many, many more years, and hopefully many, many more people discovering the joys of opera through your service.
Thank you, Simon, and thank you for your audience for having me today. Very appreciated.
It's a pleasure, David. Take care. All the greatest.
You too. Bye-bye.
David Lumley from Dallas Opera, where he is the Director of Artistic Administration. By the way, he is an opera singer also, and the overseer of Dallas Opera TV, joining us live from a gorgeous place, Santa Fe, New Mexico. More tomorrow, we'll be televised coming away, but first some words from the fine folks at Audible.com. Remember the movie Ready Player One from Steven Spielberg? Well, it was based on a very popular novel, and that novel is now a very popular audiobook from Audible.com, which you can get right now with a one-month trial. In case you don't know, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and inspiration. Over 200,000 titles to choose from, and you list them on any device. Whatever you're hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, Verbal, etc. All you got to do is sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. You get one free audiobook, 1 month trial of service, health and wellness information, and great customer service from Audible's parent, the one and the only and the always, Amazon.com. And that's not all. If you're already an Amazon Prime member, make that two audiobooks you can get for the trial of one. And that second book can come from the great collection, Fast Growing 2, of Audible Originals. That's original audio productions and podcast series, plus the best of Broadway, off-Broadway, and regional theater, plus great one-woman and one-man performances. And I believe there's some opera, too, along the way there. So how about making this week, before Memorial Day, the week to find out how Audible.com can transform the way you hear the world. Makes a great gift for you or someone you love. For all the details, it's audibletrial.com/televised. You are listening to Tomorrow Be Televised. We are the program about TV's current and future. Now in our 14th year on the air, we go into year 15 in August, and we're happy to have you with us, whether you're catching us on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, Amazon Music, Verbal, the iRadio Podcast Network. By the way, if there's a podcast site you like that doesn't carry our program, let them know you want to hear it and have them talk to us, and we'll see if we can make a deal happen. And don't forget, if you want to catch the coverage of the upfronts last week and the digital content new fronts from 3 weeks ago, go to MediaVillage.com, the Media Leadership website. You can catch my coverage. Also, my wonderful colleague, Ed Martin, who came up with a terrific story, by the way, that was just published, posted there about an hour or so ago. So check out MediaVillage.com. And while you're there, enjoy a lot of great material about where media, TV, and other media as well is going. Plus, there's great audio and video podcasts, too. For all of that, it's MediaVillage.com. Coming up in our next half hour, our new classic trivia question and the answer to the old one. But first, one of our favorite people coming to the world of TV and technology together, Shelley Palmer, will be with us. We'll find out what he thinks about this possible new trend of blockchain, cryptocurrency, not to mention crowdfunding, in getting new TV projects off the ground. He joins us after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, Spreaker.com, TuneIn.com. You're over the best in radio around the world every month and growing with more than 60 million listeners each month. Don't forget, tonight, TV Unplugged Show, one of Blog Talk Radio's most popular long-running programs. It's entertainment personified. The TV Unplugged Show tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, only on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Avon with you live from Nueva York. Coming up before the top of the hour, our new classic trivia question. Get ready for that. Three prizes in play. Plus, we'll give the answer to the old one we have been showcasing the last 2 weeks. And right now, joining me for the first time in a long while, one of the best people I know covering both the TV and the tech scene. He does it in all sorts of ways, including his own personal online destination, ShellyPalmer.com. The one and only Shelly Palmer. Hi, Shelly.
How are you, Simon? What's going on?
Quite a bit. And I got to say, some of what's going on involves something you've been following in recent weeks, and that's blockchain and cryptocurrency and NFTs. It was a week ago that Fox announced that one of their new shows they're doing this coming season is a cartoon from Dan Harmon of Community fame, and it's going to be financed by cryptocurrency and using blockchain technology. Do you think this may be the prelude to having these technologies 3 years after they were first tried for television and flunked, that this is now the time that they become mainstream in terms of getting new shows off the ground?
Well, you know, it's interesting, Simon. As a way to fund something, an NFT is pretty smart because it allows people to do crowdfunding and also have a piece of the future in a way that's completely automatic and doesn't require auditing or contracts past the point. A smart contract, which is what an NFT is, transacts business automatically when the conditions are met. And the only difference between a smart contract and a regular contract is that a smart contract is digital. And so why this works, if you crowdfund, ordinarily you'd have no way of knowing what the value of your investment was after you made it. You'd have to hope they were honest with you, hope that the funds that were going to be the profits were distributed. And if you know anything about creative accounting in Hollywood, you know that's not always the way it works out. Everybody tends to audit everybody to make sure that they all get paid. And there are some legendary lawsuits about people not getting the royalties they deserve. But here, it's really simple. You crowdfund with an NFT. The NFT is stored on a blockchain. Your profit percentage is guaranteed by the ownership of your NFT, and so that when they fund the profit into the cryptocurrency that the NFT is built in, that's it. Boom, you get your share. And so it makes it incredibly easy for anyone to crowdfund and also to pay the people in the percentage that they need to be paid automatically. So this, I think, is going to become an important financial tool for not just the show creation, but any creators. If you're doing an album, if you're doing anything where you would ordinarily say, well, Simon, you get 5% of this, and Sally, you get 2% of that, and Joey, you get 1% of that. You can just put that entire cap chart into a smart contract, and people will be paid based on, you know, their percentage ownership automatically when the money comes in, so when the crypto comes in. So I think there is a good future there. It's certainly the way that decentralized finance is meant to work, and that's really what this is about. It's not so much about cryptocurrency, and it's certainly not about the crazy crypto market that we've been hearing about the last couple of days going up and down like a yo-yo. It's more about being able to have new financial instruments that allow everyone to transact business in ways they have not been able to in the past.
And along the way, in what you just said, Shelly, you mentioned crowdfunding. And we have seen in the last couple of weeks a real increase in TV ventures being crowdfunded. Mystery Science Theater 3000, which is a big crowdfunding campaign, raised over $5.5 million to go back on the air with Netflix back in 2015. Mm-hmm. They just raised $6.5 million for another round of 14 episodes, plus short subjects, plus a way to distribute the programming, maybe through smart TV sets and devices. We talked on the in the news about Clash TV. They've raised over nearly $750,000. There's Angel Studios, which we had on the program back in April, that is now working on an animated tune that they've raised $2.5 million in crowdfunding on. It seems that there is – you sense that, again, there's new momentum here compared to the first spurt back in, like, 2014, 2015.
Well, the ordinary gatekeepers are losing a little bit of power, right? It always required a central authority. You had to take your idea to a program director who may or may not understand you, and you may know you have an audience, but that audience might not be big enough for the economics of the studio you were trying to work with. Now, you can go ahead and you can reach out to the public directly, and if your community is large enough through social media and just the normal tools we have right now, forgetting about anything new, just with what we have to work with, you can easily crowdfund. The magic of blockchain is that it empowers you to do financial deals that ordinarily that would cost you a lot of money to set up and require a lot of maintenance and a fair amount of administrative costs that just get taken out of the system. Shameless plug, Simon, I've got a brand new book out called Blockchain, Cryptocurrency, and Smart Contracts, and it's number one in a couple of categories on Amazon today, which is kind of fun because it's a the rest of the title is an executive guide to the world of decentralized finance. The small little ebook, it's only $2.99, and I'm donating my proceeds to Girls Who Code, which I think is a really important charity, really a wonderful charity. But it happens to be number one in money and monetary policy today, which is kind of fun. And it's a bestseller in short reads, so under 90 minutes, and business and money. So if you are interested in learning about the subject, you can go to Amazon. It's exclusively on Amazon, and either look up Shelley Palmer or just Blockchain, Cryptocurrency, NFTs, and Smart Contracts, and you'll find it there. Thanks for letting me just, you know, plug that a little bit. But anyway, yeah, I think you're going to see an awful lot more people going direct to the audiences and the communities they've built for support, both financially and also to share the wealth and the profit. And, you know, people enjoy that because they get to claim ownership of the things they love the most. So it's a community of practice and a community of passion. And how often will someone be, say that I, you know, get into a pool of Broadway producers and scrape together the money just to maybe put $50,000 into a show that raises $10 million to go on? How did they take their money? How were they led into that? You know, they're just super fans of Broadway. Well, this is the equivalent of being a super fan, right? You crowdfund. You get to be a part of the creative process and a part of the enabling funding that makes something that you love happen. I think it's a very, very exciting future for all creative, not just television. And certainly the TV producers have figured it out.
Before we move on to your thoughts about the upfronts and the new fronts, over most of this month, Shelley. 3 years ago, when we had this group of companies like Singular DTV and Tata Tui Notes, which we covered on our program, come up, they made the case of, all right, use blockchain, use cryptocurrency. We'll have you not only finance the show, but market, promote it, distribute it without a middleman. And you wonder at the time whether these companies were too good or offered too good of a system to be believed. And as it turned out, a lot of people didn't believe it, which is why they pretty much fell under. Do you think the environment has changed where people think this is good and we can believe this? We can believe these ways to use blockchain and crypto.
So there's a couple of things going on here all at the same time, Simon. It's a really, really good question, and it's an important question to ask. What's happened now? We've had pretty much the gross domestic product of the United States and inflation at the same rate or about the same rate for a long time. And there are real inflationary fears now. And so you put your money in the bank and it is losing its spending power every single day it's sitting there. You have to make investments in order to make money. And that's really hard to do in the normal way, right? There's a lot of friction in the financial system. And what the entire world of decentralized finance is offering, and it's new and it's nascent and it's not for everybody yet, but it's going to be for everybody soon, is another way to finance things, another way to invest, another way to do business that has a lot lower friction. Now, the NFTs are teaching people how to have digital wallets, teaching people how to transact with cryptocurrency. People know the word Bitcoin. Maybe some people know what Ethereum is and know what Ether is, which is the altcoin, the currency, the cryptocurrency of the Ethereum blockchain called Ether. ETH is the ticker symbol. But there are many others. Cardano is another blockchain. ADA, ADA is their cryptocurrency. Matic Network is the Polygon Network, another really important network there. Matic, M-A-T-I-C, is their coin. These coin names come and go. There are at least 2,000 crypto coins out there, cryptocurrencies out there. And I'm not suggesting anyone should get involved in this without doing an awful lot of homework. In fact, I'm not giving you any financial advice, and I'll say flat out, you must research this on your own. But the point that I want to make is the exact answer to your question is it's time now. If you could imagine the internet back in 1995 to 1999, that little four-year period right in there when we had finished with CompuServe and AOL and prodigy, and Mark Andreessen had just brought Netscape into the world, and we were just starting to see Hypertext Transfer Protocol, HTTP, the way the World Wide Web was going to work. And no one had seen a web browser before that. It was very early days, and you know there was an amazing amount of buzz and silliness that went on. Then there was a big crash in 2000. $8 trillion of wealth came out of the NASDAQ between March 2000 and January 2001. And then all of a sudden, here we are 18 years, 20 years later, and everything and everybody is connected to the internet. And we couldn't imagine doing life without it, without email, without being able to shop online, without being able to do all the things, bank online. So blockchain writ large, all of it, cryptocurrency, NFTs, smart contracts, which are, of course, NFTs by themselves, all of the things, the world of decentralized finance is right there. It's like somewhere between 1995 and 1998 in the world of blockchain. When we get over but it's accelerated, so this is all going to happen very quickly now. As this moves forward, we are going to see completely different ways to do business. And you know it's important now, Simon, because governments have gotten involved, gang. Wait a minute, I think I need to tax that. So as soon as the IRS woke up last week, it's like, okay, we know something important is happening here. And the Chinese government kind of went, hey, you know, we don't really like Bitcoin very much. How about our digital yuan? Like, all of a sudden, every central bank in every country in the world is getting involved. And so, yeah, now is when it's just starting. So it's a perfect time to start researching on your own. Go online, read about it, learn about it, talk to your friends about it. Do some real research. You know, I don't remember anyone teaching me to use email. I think you kind of just learn to do it. I don't remember anyone teaching me to use PowerPoint or Excel. We just all kind of learned how to do it over the years. You need to learn what blockchain is. And humbly, I would argue, or I should say, I'll just say my little book, Blockchain, Cryptocurrency, NFTs, and Smart Contracts, the Executive Guide to the World of Decentralized Finance, available on Amazon. Shameless plug, is a nice place to start, but there are plenty of places online you can go to get this information, and you should, because if you are a producer, if you're someone who loves television, if you love the world of creative across the board, production across the board, the financial part of that business has always been one of the hardest parts of the business, Simon, you know that, getting your thing funded and getting a green light. There are lots of alternative ways to finance things now and lots of alternative ways to remunerate your investors and to get your community involved and have them participate. And the way I would think about it is we couldn't be doing what we're doing right now, you and I, without the world of computers and without the internet. And so imagine if we freed up people financially to be as creative financially as we've allowed them to be with computers for their, you know, production of television, their production of video, and their production of audio and music and spoken word. So I think that's what's coming. I think we're going to see a lot of new creative ways to free ourselves, to create, and to build businesses on our own, on the value we create from our intellectual property. And this is one of the best tool sets ever created for that. So, yeah, it's time.
You're hearing Shelley Palmer. He's one of the best commentators around, covering the world of TV and technology in so many ways, everything from daily email newsletters to being the technology commentator at WNW here in New York, Channel 5 on Good Day New York and other programming. He also does a wonderful YouTube chat, which is on Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, and he does some wonderful salons too. Plus, he has the time to do a blockchain email ebook. It's available on Amazon. Again, the proceeds go to a great organization, Girls Who Code. Shelley joins me here in New York this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Abundi live from New York. Request your comment for Shelley. Make that call. Use that phone, 646-652-2906. Or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up on our special episode Wednesday, Andres Rincon, one of the key people at Canela Media, used to be at LA TV, which, by the way, marks its 20th year as a broadcast Spanish language network this year. And now he's with Canela Media, which is really expanding itself in just the last year alone as one of the major new forces in Spanish language television. Andres will be with us Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Did you ever think, Shelley, that you would see the day or be witness to the day that you go to a week like last week with the upfronts, where usually be the broadcast networks that would showcase their full primetime schedules, and they end up being an afterthought, whether it's NBC Universal, whether it's Univision, whether it's Discovery, whether it's Warner Media, whether it's Disney, that the big thing is the smart TV sets and the smart TV devices and the services that run through them, whether it is Hulu, whether it is Tubi, whether it's Discovery Plus, whether it's Paramount Plus, HBO Max, etc.?
I actually did. Not only did I think about it, I wrote about it. I wrote a book called Television Disrupted, The Transition from Network to Networked TV back in 2006. That basically describes this upfront. almost exactly.
I remember that book.
I did imagine the day. It took a lot longer than I thought it was going to take, and it didn't quite unfold, I think, the way everyone imagined that it would. Some things don't happen gradually. You know, these happened in an exponential way, and we always talk about exponential change, but I don't think people fully appreciate it, and certainly not in the TV business. You know, this is like 1, 2, 4, 8, you know, 16, 32. It keeps going, 64. All of a sudden, you got 120. Wait, that's a big number. 256, oh, my God. You know, soon enough, you are really surprised by the size of this. TV has had this coming for years, and everyone said, oh, it's not really here yet. It's like, I'm sorry. Yes, it is. And this just, it caught everyone by storm, but it shouldn't have, because this has been in the works for a very long time. And the television business needs this desperately, desperately. So hopefully the consumers will figure out their role and the advertisers will figure out their role, because the only downside to what's happening now, Simon, is the inconvenience for both the consumers who watch, and so they are forming habits that are not necessarily in the best interest of the networks and or the advertisers. And the advertisers are a little inconvenienced because it's very hard. They're living in the Tower of Babel, meaning that every advertiser is forced to optimize their ad buys against all kinds of different metrics, which isn't really new, right? Because you didn't look at radio and television and outdoor the same, or newspapers and magazines the same way. Those all had their own metrics. But you could compare intra-industry things. Like all magazines basically had the same metric. All outdoor billboards had the same metric. All television had the same metric. All radio had the same metric. Now, things that are all looking alike, video, all look like video, aren't necessarily the same. And so to a consumer, if something's available on Netflix or Prime or Hulu or YouTube TV Premium, they don't really know the difference any more than they knew the difference when they were changing channels on a cable system, channel up, channel down. You're on HBO, you're on Hallmark, you're on Discovery, you're on WNBC. To you, you're on a TV channel. To the business, you were on a very specific distribution network that had a very specific set of rules and financial models. Consumers were changing channels. Well, right now, consumers are still just changing channels, metaphorically, and so they don't care, other than the fact that they may have to pay for some of those channels they're changing into, but the advertisers have a whole different world to deal with, and networks have a whole different deal, and this is what's causing a lot of, let's just call it wincing, I won't call it screaming in pain, but a lot of wincing and kicking and hollering, because it's harder to do business if you're an advertiser or a network now. Competition is fierce, and Simon, you know better than anybody that digital can be a race to the bottom because there's no scarcity. You have to be really careful about that. There's no such thing as 8 o'clock on Thursday night in something that's on demand.
And as a matter of fact, we're having days now where a network will get 1 million, 2 million, 3 million people watching live on their broadcast network, whether it's ABC, CBS, NBC, the CW, et cetera, et cetera. And something else, too, that really hit home, both with the digital content new fronts, 2 weeks before the upfronts, is this. You now have the smart TV device and the set being a player for advertising. Samsung wants to be an ad player. Vizio not only wants to be an ad player, they want to make new channels. They're actually going to create new channels. Roku is now in the content-making business, as well as in the interactive TV offering business with Food Network Kitchen. They're the first people besides Amazon is now running that service in Discovery. And they also want to create original programming. And you also have these multi-channel bundles like Tubi that also are creating original programming. So you now have additional competition from what these smart sets and devices are causing.
Well, you know, you fish where the fish are, Simon. When you turn on your television set, Samsung kind of has a leg up on you, right? They have more TV sets in the market than anybody. You're picking up your Samsung remote control, and it goes to the Samsung home screen, and then it allows you to choose the source. And since most households that have cut the cord have to then decide whether they're going to use their online tools, or, you know, is it going to be, am I going to watch something streaming now? Am I going to watch something on a sidecar like an Apple TV or something that would be a media server? So Samsung is in control of how you go from place to place. That home screen is very valuable. As you know, any home screen is very valuable. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Vizio's realized this, that they've got you, that you're holding a Vizio remote control. Samsung knows this. Comcast used to know it, right, when you were holding your cable remote. they understood that very well. So, yeah, it's the first mover advantage. By the way, you know, when you watch on an iPad, and so many people do, or you watch on your laptop, and so many people do, you know, who's in charge there? Is that Apple? Is that Google? Are you doing it through the YouTube premium apps? Are you a browser? Are you in an actual app? There are real questions about this. So, yeah, there's no question in the world that Vizio, Roku, because they've got the sidecars, everybody is going to start trying to maximize the value of the time that you spend with them, right? Samsung has your attention for, what, a couple seconds as you go where you want to go? Why are they wasting that? They might as well put an image up and get you to click on it and pay, and have someone pay them for it. By the way, considering the margin they have on the set, that's a much better business. They make a lot more. They should give you the set if they can have the advertising.
And Shelly, here's something else too. What now becomes the success factor for a broadcast network show? You know, first it was the rating on the broadcast network. Then it became the broadcast network plus the DVR. You know, the live plus
mm-hmm.
three,
yeah.
live plus, et cetera.
Yeah, live plus three. Live.
Now
uh-huh.
it may end up being the broadcast plus what you get on the smart TV afterward, whether it's on Hulu, whether it's on Netflix, whether it's on Tubi, whether it's on Paramount Plus, et cetera, et cetera. In fact, we have two, maybe three CBS shows from this season that are going to be moving next year or this fall to Paramount Plus. So it may end up being that the broadcast networks become a feeder for their mega content services.
Well, I think the Barker channel, the networks have become Barker channels. Also, Simon, there's a massive natural segmentation between TV watchers, heavy TV watchers, and people who get their content streaming. You know, there's an age difference, there's a convenience difference, there's a lot of study being done about who's watching broadcast television and who is streaming. And so these are different audiences, and they have different economics associated with them. When you look at the amount of money that's being spent in television production right now, and I don't think anyone knows better what's being spent in TV production than you do, you know it's the platinum age of TV. We're seeing some of the best television, meaning video, just from a pure aesthetic and creative perspective, some of the best work ever done in history, and a lot of it. You know, a couple of mm-hmm. 600 shows are in production, even post-COVID. It's unbelievable how many shows. Brilliant, beautiful shows are being made right now. Really, some are great, some suck. They all have a very high level of production value. How do you pay for all that? Because there used to be windows, and there were all kinds of different ways you could get paid. But now, once you're streaming, you're on a streaming service. So this is going to be a really interesting economic model, and I think we're going to see a pretty significant shakeout. And my suspicion is you're going to see the very biggest tech organizations who really have a lot of money excel here, and I think it's going to be a struggle for traditional models where you used to have different windows. You used to have a pay-per-view window, and then the network will go off network. You go into syndication. Like, all that's done. It's streaming. That's what it is. It's available online now, and it's always going to be available online. So there's no other, you know, is it part of a subscription service or is it pay-per-view? And pay-per-view isn't what people are into right now. They're into streaming services. So your guess is as good as mine, but I think if you're taking a bet, what it means to create the kind of value you need to create for a television series that used to, you know, big money TV series, this is going to get harder and harder. The competition is fierce, and there's a limited amount of money.
Yep. Sounds like it's going to be the starting point for our next Tomorrow Televised conversation. Can't wait for it. If you want to know more about what Shelley is up to, and he's got a lot of things he's up to, go to ShelleyPalmer.com. Check out his weekly Wednesday chat on YouTube. It's a chat worth watching, and you can be part of it too. That's at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific every Wednesday. He also has networking salons throughout the week as well, usually in the 11 o'clock to noon time period on the East Coast and the 8 to 9 p.m. period on the West. And don't forget his new ebook about blockchain, available on Amazon.com. Proceeds go to Girls Who Code. Shelley, thanks so much for coming on. It's always a pleasure. I'm happy to finally have you back after a great long while. Let's have you back sooner the next time around.
Thank you, Simon. Thank you, Simon. Take care.
You too, Shelley. All the greatest. Shelley Palmer joining us live here in New York. Now time for our classic trivia question of the week. Nobody got the answer to the question we posed over the last 2 weeks, which was, who played Kit Carson on The Adventures of Kit Carson? The answer, Bill Williams was the person, and he not only did that show, but before the end of the 1950s, he did two other programs, Underwater Adventure, which ran a season in syndication, and then Date with the Angels, his co-star for that program, Betty White. Bill Williams, he played Kit Carson for 4 years, 1951 to 55, on The Adventures of Kit Carson. Well, let's give you a new classic trivia question before we go off for today, and same three prizes in play, two Babylon 5 soundtracks by the composer of that popular series, Christopher Frank, and Departures, season one of a series that was on Afterlife Network, later syndicated around the world on National Geographic channels. Here's the question. Gene Kelly, the famous song and dance star of Singing in the Rain fame and other great movies, he did two television series he starred in over the course of his career. One was an adaptation of an Oscar-winning movie of the 1940s. The other was a variety series. Name either one. Gene Kelly starred in two television series over his career. One, an adaptation of a popular 1940s movie that won the Academy Award, I believe, for Best Picture. And the other was a variety show. Name either one. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to include your name and where you're emailing from. First of the grant there, you win. And if we don't get a winner by the end today, we'll post the question tomorrow morning on Facebook and on Twitter. However you play, be in for the win, because, you know, we want to hear from you and all the very best. It's been about a month since we've had a winner. Let's get one this week. Great way to wrap up May before Memorial Day weekend. Thanks to both of our guests for being with us and all of you for tuning in. Don't forget, next episode is less than 48 hours from now with Andres Rincon, Senior Vice President at Canela Media. Came late on today's program. Want to catch an episode you missed? Go to the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out the podcast available all over the place, including Spreaker Podcast, TuneIn Radio, TuneIn.com, Amazon Music, Verbal, and, of course, iHeartRadio.com. And remember, we'd love to hear from you, so email me, use Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. We do respond within 24 hours. Why? Because what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed here are those of the participants. Now, say those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Our production associate, BTR, is Mandolin. Eddie Toe is Blog Talk Radio General Manager. Jay Sonnenberg is Head of Content. And the co-founders, Alan Levy and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow Be Televised, brought to you by Audible.com and Amazon Division. Remember, Audible will transform the way you hear the world. For a free audiobook or two and much more, it's audibletrial.com/televised. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a great rest of your Monday and a good kickoff to your Memorial Day, pre-Memorial Day week. We'll be back on Wednesday, same time and place, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, Amazon Music, Verbal, and the IR Radio Podcast Network. And as always, whatever you're up to be now and then, please make it safe and make it great, because we are licking this pandemic now more than ever. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.